This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are spending the last 2 weeks of 2018 looking back at everything that the year has brought. Today, the focus is on education. We now have a new education minister in a new government. What has changed and what hasn't? Joining us, Tunku Munawira Putra, Honorary Secretary at the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lynn and Kelvin, for inviting both of us here.
So let's start then by focusing on our new education minister. We've heard a lot of announcements coming from Dr. Mazli Malik since Pakatan Harapan took over in May, and they have often been met with a fair amount of ridicule. But there's also been a lot of conversation about whether or not the public has been fair. So give us the insider perspective on whether or not the ministry has made much improvements to our education system so far. What has changed and what hasn't?
The education system, as proposed or being led by Pakatan Harapan government, is that they want it to be free from political interference. And we see that in his the new minister's directive and also action. For example, he proposed that our universities be autonomous and be self-funding. That itself, in a way, helps to give some sort of independence to the university so that they don't have to kowtow, if I may use the word, to the political leaders or people who give them grants. And at the same time, he is also looking into fine-tuning our education system so that our students are able to achieve a higher order of thinking skills. And I think he's doing that just perfectly. However, the nations are all in the comfort zone. They don't want to see many changes. So because of the changes that he has proposed, therefore, he's subject to lots of ridicule and lots of criticism.
You know, teachers have been facing problems with too much paperwork for a very long time, and that cuts into teaching time. Have you guys seen that being resolved yet?
All right. I would not like to use the word teaching time. I would like to use the word face time. When YB, Dr. Masi, took office, we met him on the 9th of July. And after that, from that meeting, we have brought up many issues. There were 41 issues, actually, that we have brought up to him. And one of them was this irrelevant documentation or paperwork among the teachers. So after that meeting, the initial meeting, and also after that, we had also a meeting with YB Teo. And subsequently, we had 15 engagement sessions with the ministry of looking into the issue of irrelevant documentation. And on the 29th of December, we are happy that the minister has consented to come to an assembly of 1,000 teachers, whereby he will make some important announcements as regard to the reduction of paperwork among us.
Tunku Muna, broadly speaking, how do you feel, how do you think parents are reacting to some of these announcements and some of these changes that are being made within the education system?
It's a work in progress. You know, the MPPK, the Majlis Penasihat Pendidikan Kebangsaan, where Datin Azimah is in, and the JKDPN, Jawatan Kuasa Kajian Dasar Pendidikan Negara, have yet to make recommendations. So, you know, people are expecting a lot from this new government and people are impatient. So let's just go with the flow, wait and see the recommendations that comes from them, and then we will see more things happening.
I want to kind of look objectively, though, at some of the minister's ideas. So we've heard black school shoes and socks, swimming lessons in hotel pools, lighter school bags. And for those, he has received, like I said, a fair amount of pushback. And these ideas might sound fluffy or small to people outside the education world, but do they mean significant changes for students as well as for those directly involved in education?
He was responding to situation that would make things better for the children. I mean, you see about the swimming, for example. Swimming lessons are good. They save lives. And safety in the water is important as well. So, you know, some countries like the Netherlands, they used to make it as part of the curriculum because of their geographic location. Two-thirds of Netherlands is vulnerable to flooding. A third of Netherlands is below sea level. But you know, due to their budget cuts, Netherlands can no longer sustain that swimming as part of the curriculum. But Dutch parents, they still think that swimming is important, so they go and take their children there. So at the end of the day, we see that Malaysia has an extensive coastline, mining pools, paddy field ditches and all these. So parents should play a part in sending their children for swimming lessons.
So as for black shoes, this issue has already been discussed and also been in the Ministry of Education for the past few years, because there were already requests by the parents, and in some schools, black shoes are already the norm. And for example, if you can remember, if you're in schools, the prefects were already allowed to wear black shoes. So there were requests and there were the pros and cons of it. It was already discussed. However, the previous administration did not act on it. It's only that this current minister, he had the guts and then he made a decision on it and he was ridiculed for it. All right. So coming back to swimming pools or the teaching of swimming lessons. Now, 70% of the world is, there's water around 70% of the world. And then our country is, you know, it's one, there's a peninsula where three sides of the land are all covered by water. And then the other one, Sabah and Sarawak in the Borneo Island, where it's total, you know, is surrounded by water, bodies of water. So swimming lessons should be a must. And it helps, actually, if you ask any physical education teacher, swimming is a very good lesson as it exercises all the muscles. And at the same time, swimming also helps us to save lives in case of emergencies and so on and so forth. Now, he was ridiculed not for the swimming lessons, but for the proposing the use of swimming pools in hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at this current day and age, everyone is talking about CSR. So he's just proposing, why don't you, the hotels, why you can't you look into this as a CSR? So, but then because of his proposal, I wouldn't say a drastic proposal, but something out of the ordinary, and then people politicize his statements.
So I guess for the changes we've seen, a lot of the feedback that we get on our messages, on calls that we receive at the station is that with the changes, the teachers are not ready. Are the teachers ready to take on these changes, including streaming, the removal of streaming at schools?
All right. I think the term is not whether the teachers are ready or not. We are trained to teach either when there is streaming and when there is no streaming. So the thing is that what approach do you want? To make it easy, for example, when in any education or in any process of learning, whether you want the deep-end approach or you want the shallow-end approach. Okay. So now, for us, in the eyes of the union and also a teacher, we believe in the democratization of education. That means everybody must have equal access to the same kind of teachers, the same quality of education. So if you have streaming, then the students in the top schools may have access to better, you know, to more lessons or more, I wouldn't say more qualified teachers, but then there will be the interaction because the students are prime to get the A's for the schools, so they'll be looked after. Whereas those students in the AIN classes, the first thing everybody will say is these are the no-hopers and so on and so forth. So we must tell them that the world is not a bed of roses. Everybody must be together in the same pool so that they are able to learn that this world, we have ups and downs, we have the clever ones and the not-so-clever ones. So that's important for us. So as a unionist and also as NUTP believes, we believe that education should be an equitable factor.
Yeah.
All right, in this case. However, because of some constraints, for example, like this coming 2019, for the year one classes in federal territory, they have to allocate for 40 students per class, for year one students. Mm. So it's a problem for the teachers. So that's why, because of these needs, other needs by the school, that's why they have no choice but to resort to streaming at some sort of level, some level of sort.
We're speaking today with Harry Tan of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, as well as Tunku Munawira Putra of the Parent Action Group for Education. We are covering the changes that have happened in education in 2018. Up next, we continue our conversation and we take a look at the budget. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are taking a look at 2018 in education. Joining us, Tunku Munawiraputra, Honorary Secretary at the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. So we get a perspective from both the teacher's point of view as well as the parents. And now, education was given an increase in budget this year to 60.2 billion ringgit. The ministry has said that focus is going to be given to infrastructure development. Do many schools still face a problem with proper infrastructure?
Well, if you look at the research done by the Subang MP recently, he said that the Subang constituency needed 19.3 million for 52 schools. But the budget given to national schools, 250 million, shared with 8,000 schools. And, you know, it goes on to about 50 million for various different schools. So what we're looking at is that some schools get bigger chunk and some schools get the least, and the national schools gets the least. So it's just not enough.
Mm. In my opinion, well, money is never enough.
Yeah.
All right. So what we are looking at, we should be looking at more comfortable schools, better equipped schools, and of course, safer schools. So in its aspect, if we're talking about the comfort of the students, we look at the chairs, the tables, the fans that are working, or the toilets that are not clogged. So this is where we believe that the money will go to, for better maintenance of the schools, for the comfort of the schools. And of course, we also talk about better equipped schools, for example, like in our vocational colleges. Right now, at the moment, when the students study automotive maintenance, they are given an engine that still runs on the carburetor system. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you buy a Honda City or you buy any car outside, you have hybrid, you have latest form of fuel injection system into it. So the students, when they graduate from these colleges, they are not job ready. So we believe that the budget should address this problem. And of course, there's the issue of the safety of the schools. For example, in Sabah, there are cases of where schools don't even have a fence around the perimeter of the school. All right. So this is something that we need to address and, of course, look into the safety aspects. And also, for example, in towns where the traffic volume is high, we should also look at maybe engaging traffic wardens to help the students cross the road safely.
Yeah, PIBG helps a lot in these schools. Without PIBG, it can be, you know, not good for the kids, especially on safety issue. But the thing is that, yeah, money is hard to come by, and the PIBG weighs the options of what do we do, prioritize in spending. And they do that. Toilets are always a problem, you know?
So you were talking about Sabah and Sarawak, and in a similar vein, I guess, there's also been discussions about the lack of school teachers in East Malaysia. Can you give us an idea of what the problem looks like at the moment?
Okay. Due to the 20-point Malaysia agreement and also due to some political development, the Sarawakians and Sabahans, they have insisted that they have there's a policy of having 90% of the teachers must be from Sabah or Sarawak, and 10% from Peninsula. Now, this has caused a problem for ensuring that there are enough teachers over there. For example, this year alone, there are requests from 1,043 teachers from primary schools to be transferred back from Sarawak to Peninsula. Sabah itself has 566 primary school teachers. Now, if you to add that with the secondary school teachers, 621 have put in the application for transfer from Sarawak, and 516 from Sabah. So if you look at the figures, 2,700 plus teachers from Peninsula who are currently teaching in Sabah and Sarawak, they want to come back to Peninsula. And the vacuum is unable to be filled up by the locals from Sabah and Sarawak. So as a result of this, there will be the issue, some, you know, family issues and so on and so forth. So making the teachers an unhappy lot. And when they are unhappy, of course, they are unable to fulfill their passion to the fullest of their ability. So we hope that the government will address this issue, solve it in an amicable way, whereby the students are able to have access to qualified and quality teachers.
And taking a look back at some of the news that have shaped the education world this year, back in February, there was a Form 2 student, Vasanta Piriya, who committed suicide after a teacher accused her of stealing a phone. And then there was then discussion about how disciplinary cases should be handled, perhaps with better systems, perhaps with more compassion. How have you seen schools and educators reacting to this? And for that matter, what were your own reactions?
It is sad. Even the statistics on the National Health and Morbidity Survey says that, you know, 50% of the 120,000 students surveyed face personal problems. So we have to look at these issues of stress in schools, and also, you know, children go to school carrying the baggage of their home, so you don't know what kind of homes they come from. So for some of the students who have problems at home, we hope that the teachers can identify these problems and help them along the way. I know that there are some counselors being stationed at schools, so hopefully the teachers can identify these students and then work with the counselor on how to tackle these problems.
All right, disciplinary problems will always be there. It has been there since the time that the human race was or has existed. Now, there is a public misconception that, you know, when you talk about discipline problems, the public is thinking that we are talking about students who don't hand in their homework, who don't wear badges, who have long hair, and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, I mean, these cases are easy for the teachers to handle. But unfortunately, nowadays, because of the advent of our society and then the level of education among our students is much higher, and also they are more affluent. With that comes new problems such as gangsterism, glue sniffing, stealing, bullying. Of course, it has always been there, but all these problems are bordering criminal activities. So teachers need to be more trained or more well taught to delve into this matter. And not only just by having the same training that they had when they were in the universities or varsities in treating these disciplinary problems, like not doing their homework and so on and so forth, but these cases that are more in criminal in nature. All right? So now, coming back to the case of Vasanta Priya, where, you know, there's also, I think, a misconception of the public that she killed herself because of the teacher accusing her of stealing a handphone. But the coroner did not establish this fact at all. All right? So, and we also did not go into the mindset of the student herself. What was it? Is she, was her mind disturbed? Was she, wanting to wanted to take her own life prior to this incident? So these are things that we have not really established nor look into it further. So it's not fair for the public to associate Vasanta Priya with the teacher accusing of stealing their handphone and, you know, maybe causing her death in that way.
Now, having said that, I hear between what you both have said, there seems to be a balance that needs to be struck, right? Because on the one hand, you have, as you say, Harry, disciplinary acts or disciplinary transgressions that are approaching the criminal. But on the other hand, as Tunku Muna alluded to, you might have a situation at home that is leading to that. You might have all these circumstances that are building up to that. So in terms of discipline, what then do we need to see more of in terms of trying to keep the peace at schools, but also not further hurting people who might be hurt in other ways at home, for example?
I move my youngest daughter to another school, to a learning centre, actually. So before we could register her in, she had to sign a document to say that I will not bully anyone. And if I do bully someone, I will be expelled. I had to sign it too. So that's how the school has established that, no, we do not tolerate bullying. So the student knows, the parents also know. There is, you know, zero tolerance to bullying. I think schools should have that zero tolerance to bullying. So any problems, maybe, you know, it comes with some kind of personal problems. But before this kid goes into bigger problems, there must be some trigger points to identify this problem, that this kid has got a problem.
To put it in a broader perspective, now everyone knows that if you carry or you peddle drugs in Malaysia, you are caught, then you'll be hanged to death.
For now.
Yeah, for now. Right, okay. It is still, the fact is still that it is now. So, but then if you look at it, there are more people peddling in drugs than it was before, although they know that there is a death penalty in Malaysia. So likewise, bullying is also a problem that has persisted over the years. Now, it is in our public schools, there is zero tolerance. However, because of maybe the number of students or the student teacher to student ratio is too big, therefore the students do not get the individual attention or the disciplinary needs that they need to be addressed. Now, coming back again, we also are proposing to the Ministry of Education to relook our disciplinary rules, all right? Because some of the rules have been written up some time back and they seem to be outdated. For example, a case in point, long hair, all right? So it's long hair because the teachers or the school wants the students to have uniform long hair. Fair enough, they say your hair should not be longer than this and so on and so forth. What about skinheads? Would that be a problem? I'm sporting a short hair, but then they say I have a map of Malaysia on my head. I mean, is that a problem for the teachers? So these are things that we need to change with the times, because students, you know, when they are young, they are rebellious. So we need to address all these issues so that we can look forward, and we can't be using a formula that was drawn up 10, 20 years ago to look into the needs of the students today.
We're speaking today with Tunku Munawira Putra, Honorary Secretary at the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, who is the Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. We're talking about education in 2018. Up next, we discuss the UEC. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are joined in the studio by Tunku Munawira Putra of PAGE, that's the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan of NUTP, that's the National Union of the Teaching Profession. They are both here because we're talking about how education has been in 2018. So for our next point, the United Examination Certificate, or the UEC, also garnered some attention when the Ministry announced their consideration to recognise it for entry into public universities. What have been the sorts of conversations going on since?
I think the minister has also set up a task force to look into this matter seriously. And I believe they are now currently engaging with many sections of the society. Now, as NUTP, we are educationists. So we look at this issue from the education point of view. Now, besides UEC, we also have various kinds of qualifications using other mediums of instruction, for example, from the TAFE schools, our students from the international schools, or those students that have undergone the curriculum in other countries of the world. So whatever it is, when they come back to our country, if they want their certificate to be recognized, we believe that they must be subject to the same conditions for any curriculum that they have undergone. For example, like the doctors, if they come to our country with a foreign degree, they must have a credit in SPM Bahasa. There is no two ways about it. You must have that. And then at the same time, because we are Malaysians, we must have a knowledge of the Malaysian history. So our proposal in this particular aspect is that the students and taking any other kinds of certification or any kind of curriculum, they must have some credit hours that is to be determined by the Ministry of Education or by any relevant authorities that the students have to undergo.
Well, as parents, parents who enroll children in Chinese school or the English education where it's international, they are prepared and would have made plans to send their offspring to private universities or overseas. So the conversation on public university is there, but doesn't really... They know what they have to do. It's already that pathway that they've already charted for their children. So is an option if it's there. If it's not, it's okay. You know? And the other side, where there is a tertiary education, PAGE believe that the tertiary education should be given the autonomy to decide if the students meet their entry requirement. Doesn't really matter how, what. So as long as they meet the entry requirement, the students should not be precluded from entering university on the basis of race, religion, and the school stream they come from. A student should only be rejected if his or her academic standard is deemed not to be of the level required for the rigorous university program, or the student does not meet the language proficiency requirement. And just, you know, they have to make sure that the students can keep up with the coursework. Simple as that.
In a similar vein, the single stream versus vernacular education debate continues. Do these sort of conversations affect sentiment among educators in any way?
The answer to me will be yes and no. No, in the sense that we as educators, our job is to impart knowledge and values. The language is just a medium. So if you are looking into that per se, I think there's no issue. But however, we are also members of society where race politics have been indoctrinated into us. So this is something sad, but unfortunately it's something that we have to live with. So as I said just now, the answer is yes and no.
And another piece of news that came out and that I guess we were celebrating at the station was that stateless children are going to be allowed into national schools starting next year. Have you had any thoughts on this development?
This is our request. Because as teachers, we believe that no one should be excluded from having an education. And education is a way for upward mobility. So it is a human right. And we as educationalists, we believe that this right should be made accessible to everyone.
Yep, agree with that one.
And I think, Harry, earlier you mentioned how when we're talking about cars, you know, learning engines, for example, we're still working with really outdated models. There's been talk of preparing students for the Industrial Revolution 4.0. What is being done in that regard?
Well, it is. We've come to the early stages of the IR for Industrial Revolution 4.0. So it is the age of automation, supercomputing, artificial intelligence and robotics. I mean, we want the future generation to be job creators and innovators. The dependency on job markets for security is no longer sufficient. Humans cannot compete with machines. Humans have the edge over machines in terms of creativity, social and emotional interactions. Machine can't replace teachers, although machine can help to aid the learning. We have to consider how we use technology. Is it to amplify learning, or is it used as a replacement for lack of teaching? There are debates going on in the world with regards to designing the school to meet the challenges of the future. Exam-centric education is no longer sufficient. The discussion is centered on project-based learning, problem-solving, collaboration, engaging lessons and interaction with teachers, and group work. It is not just about content knowledge, but how we use the knowledge that we know to solve the real-world problems. We are far behind in that in comparison to other countries with regards to the pathway that would lead us towards the education 4.0 era. It is not just about getting technology into the classrooms or coding lessons or access to digital textbooks, but it is a start. It's a good start that we have. But what we need, more importantly, is a plan. What do we envision Malaysia in the future to be, and how can we work towards that? For now, although no country has yet to develop and implement the perfect national education policy, a few countries are well on their way. Many countries have strategic plans in place towards that goal. According to the World Economic Forum, countries that are best at preparing kids for the jobs of the future rank Singapore, Japan, and South Korea as top countries where children are best at working together. When Singapore announced that they were reducing the number of exams and assessment in schools for lower primary, we know that they have already plans in place to replace the old system and that their 15-year-old and under are top of the charts of those who are best at collaboration and problem solving. But it can't be said the same about us. While we agree that lower primary should have fewer exams, we are unsure if the system replacing it would be effective or have data to prove that it can be effective.
All right. As for this artificial intelligence move, every parent would want the best for their child. So as educators, we agree with that. And at the same time, we also are proposing to the government that TVET is the way forward. For example, as a unionist, we believe in the minimum wage. And the minimum wage, we believe, should be raised to 1,005. But then, if we were to raise a minimum wage to 1,005 and we pay that to our normal sweeper, we are going to have a problem with the country's finances. So the only way is that if the person is better equipped with skills, then we are able to give this wage to the person. Now, everyone is talking about the good of this IR 4.0. However, we as educationists in the Ministry of Education and also in other five other ministries, we have a big problem with this vocational training. We have problems with the infrastructure, that means the equipment, as I said earlier. We also have problem with the accreditation. Some of them have undergone 4 years of training. At the end of the day, their certificates or the diplomas that they get are simply not accredited or not recognized. And at the same time, the government must also address the issue of equating the qualifications of the technologies, that means those people who have undergone TVET training, with those academicians. For example, if you are an engineer undergoing the TVET training and an engineer that comes out from the university academically, you should be at par. But unfortunately, our government does not see that they are at par. They put them one level, the academicians at the higher level and the technologies at a step lower. So this issue must be addressed. And then, of course, there is certification. Now, we have six ministries coming out with six different kinds of certificates. So it's very difficult for the public or for anybody who comes into contact or want to employ them to see which one is the right certificate to be used. Of course, we have one that is a skill-based certificate given by the Ministry of Human Resource. But unfortunately, they have certain criteria and so on, and some of them which are not met by the other ministries offering the TVET education. So in this particular case, we are strongly with the Minister of Education, who has made YB Nurul Izzah the person in charge of overseeing the TVET throughout the whole ministries and throughout the whole country. And also, I think the cabinet recently has agreed to the setting up of a commission to look into this TVET. However, we had a meeting through QPEX with the Prime Minister recently, where I voiced out the issue that, Prime Minister, you must give more clout, more powers to YB Nurul to make sure that everything falls into place and the country is on the right direction. Because as it is now, we don't have the right direction for TVET. For example, let me give you an example. We have certain budget for TVET education. Now, how many percent of it goes into aviation? How many percent of it goes into agriculture? How many percent of it goes to the automobile industry? We don't have a policy on this. So we hope that YB Nurul, with her, hopefully with more clout, she will be able to address this problem so that we can propel our country forward.
We're speaking today to Tunku Munawira Putra, Honorary Secretary of the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, about the state of education in our country in 2018. We'll be back after some quick messages. Keep it locked here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin in the studio today. Tunku Munawira Putra, Honorary Secretary of the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. They are here to give us an overview of how education has changed in 2018. Now, there were several high-profile headlines about the well-being and rights of children. Early in the year, UNICEF released a report highlighting urban child poverty and malnutrition, and Education Minister Mazli Malik announced recently that there would be free nutritious breakfasts for students. But really, how have nutrition plans in schools worked so far? What else is being done to aid students' well-being?
All right. At the moment, currently, we already have two programs and also other aids to help the students acquire the right nutrition. For example, the Rancangan Makanan Tambahan, where the students are given breakfast every day in the morning and they have the menu to follow. And also, they have the milk program. However, there are some weaknesses into this. So the diet, if it's supposed to be balanced, is more in our eyes, you know, although I don't have the statistics, more carbohydrate-based. Mm. All right, so just to fill up the stomachs. But I think we need to look at it because it also has an issue with funding and also issue with logistics and so on and so forth. So with a new government, maybe with a new direction by the minister, maybe this matter can be made better. I wouldn't say it was not good last time, but it can be made better.
Yeah, it's just the quality is the problem. You know, you get milk, but it's stale, basi. you get food, it's like everyday jam and butter and bread, and that's it. You know, it's not wholesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the milk is bad, but,
you know,
but
it's
a
cooling,
but it's not fresh milk. It's not milk that is, you know, because of the logistical problem.
Exactly.
So it's all in the boxes and it's sweetened milk. So to fill up the stomachs, I think that's okay. But in the long run, it's not that
not sustainable.
Welcome. Not that welcome.
Another issue that we heard a lot about was, of course, child marriage. There was a lot of attention raised after the public became aware of news surrounding the marriage of an 11-year-old Thai girl to a 41-year-old Malaysian man. And so a related conversation, I suppose, would be around sex education in schools or child rights education. What's the status of those sorts of topics and education being introduced into the schools?
Well, reproduction is part of science subject in school, so that's just about it. But there are some programs that's running out of school, or even schools can, or PIBG can, you know, have arranged these outside people to come into school and talk to the children about it. I know that there was last time in my daughter's kindergarten, she was six, the kindergarten arranged for some people to come and talk about what's a good touch, what's a not a good touch, you know. So there should be programs that will have, you know, carry forward from when they are children to up till their adolescence. So at least there's some kind of progression in terms of that education.
And that will be appropriate at different levels, at different times, I suppose.
Yeah, like what Tunku said, right now, sex education in our schools is actually just learning in the science subject, where it is, we are just learning about the reproductive organs and how reproduction is. However, we are not taking into account what sex education should be. And of course, sad to say, we are from an Eastern country where there are Eastern values. Sex is definitely a taboo. But unfortunately, we must also teach our students, like what Tengku has said, what it would be constitute a good touch, what is not. And of course, we must adhere, or we must submit to the idea that sex is pleasurable. Right, so you must tell. So sex is pleasurable, but of course, with that comes responsibility. So if you get someone pregnant, you have children, you have to look after them. So that is something that we are not addressing, we are not looking into. So as a result of that, so we have this problem, like with this young children marriage, child marriage, and we believe that, you know, we, of course, we are definitely against it, because when there is child marriage, that means you have already taken the right of the child to continue with her schooling. And what more if she has a baby and then this is just a continuation of the vicious circle, because her family will not be as matured as someone who is ready to face family life.
Yeah, this is in regards to sexual grooming, actually, because, you know, you can't take a 16 years old, or even in this case, 11. She's 11, right? And marrying a 40-something, that is classic case of sexual grooming, which is a no-no.
So what do you think needs more attention from the ministry, and what's your assessment of our progress so far in terms of education?
I wouldn't say what I think needs more attention from the ministry. I believe now what we need is more support from the public. Because the minister, after 61 years, he is there only, you know, from another government. He's only there, I think, since May the 9th. So, and he's only has about 6 months. So I think everybody in the public wants instant noodle results. So you throw something into the pot, you want it out ready, fresh, and be served. So we must give the minister some time, because even if you start work in any organization, you are given the what they call it probation period. So we believe that there must be some sort of probation for him to adjust, to fine-tune the policies that have been taken all these years and which the public are clamoring for change. So we must give him some time.
Yeah, in that sense, we do need to take stock of the current situation. I mean, they have to get this conversation going where there's new system replacing the old system, but the old system is just not yet stopped. So this is where the teachers has to do both, which is irrelevant. I mean, as a parent, I have to fill up the form every year. Why? It's the same thing. What happened to those previous years' forms? So yeah. These are redundant things that is keeps on happening over and over again. So we got to stop it somewhere. We have to have this discussion, how to make smooth everything.
Yeah, but in this new climate, so we are able to voice out our frustrations, voice out our dreams, and we believe that this should be continued. Because by allowing this sort of dissent or this sort of discourse, then everyone is in the know. And when everyone is in the know, for example, you know what is the problem, then you try to address the problem. But in the previous scenario, whereby certain things are hidden from everyone, or certain things are not brought up into the open. So it becomes a problem for us to try to resolve the problem.
This is where I feel that the school leaders should be the one who's the CEO of the school and make decisions. Okay, if this is good, do. If this is not good, how to make this better? Yes, the school leader may get some kind of pressure from above, from PPD or JPN, but they have to work together. They have to, you know, sit down and iron it out and make sure they resolve the issue. I don't know how this can be done, but yeah, the chain needs to be straightened up, and we feel that that is the issue. That is the biggest issue, actually.
Yeah, we agree, Tengku. The new minister is trying to introduce professionalism in our system. He is trying to allow the teachers to teach. So we welcome that. And of course, he needs time, because to unravel, to make things go right again, it takes time.
Thank you both very much for joining us today. We've been speaking with Tunku Munawira Putra, Honorary Secretary at the Parent Action Group for Education, and Harry Tan, the Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. And we've been taking a look back at what 2018 has brought us in education. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.